Okay, so welcome to Super Section. Today we have a lot of fun topics to talk about. Linked lists, both singly and doubly linked. Hash tables, binary trees, which we are going to break down into two types that we're going to focus on today, binary search trees and binary heaps. And then hopefully we'll have time to talk about Huffman encoding, which will come in handy for problem set 6, I believe. Don't know off the top of my head, though. So what a linked list is. So a linked list is basically a data structure that is very powerful and very useful. And what it does is it contains data and also connections to other pieces of to other structures that contain similar data types. So since we just said that a linked list is a data structure, we know that we're going to have to create one using the keyword struct, which we learned about recently. And when you create a struct, you got to give it a name of some kind. So we're going to call it an underbar node underbar t. And you'll see why I put the underbar here in a little bit. So again, linked lists contain data of some kind. For our purposes today, whenever we're talking about nodes, we're going to assume that that data is always an integer. And then it has to have some sort of connection to another node. So basically, you can imagine the node as being something like this, where it has a data field that contains an integer, and then some sort of arrow to another one that has a data field and an arrow, etc. So when we think about arrows, what are we thinking about in the encoding? Right, it's a pointer to the next element. And what is the type of the next element? You're right, it's the structure. So we want to create a pointer to this data type. And we'll just give it a name, next, because it points to the next element in the linked list. And that's really all we need for a singly linked list, which we'll talk about for now. Now, we don't want to have to write struct underbar node underbar t every time we call a node, because that's just a mouthful. So we'll also type def it. The way it is now, if you're not type defing it, this is sufficient. A semicolon would be needed here. But yeah, that would give you your structure. And then we got to give it another name. So this time I'm just going to call it node underbar t, which is different from underbar node underbar t. Now, before we move on, I want to explain why I did that. Okay, so we know that it's going to contain a data field and a pointer to another thing of the same type. The problem is, if we're type defing it, this type isn't known yet. Because we make it right here. But it's sort of like we're recursively defining the type. So fortunately, when you have type def, we have two names. We have the old name and the new name. So we just wanted to use the old name as the pointer. But now, this is equivalent to putting a node t here and it working. Sure, I'll explain that again. So it contains a data field, right? And it contains a pointer to another object of the same type. And we're making this type right now. So we can't put node underbar t here, node underbar t star, because we don't have it yet. We're still making it. But remember that with type def, we can say type def old name, new name. This right here is the old name, or will be the old name, for what this is. And since we know this old name, we can use that when we're creating the pointer. I know it's kind of tricky. Do you think you understand it, or do you want me to?
Can you explain a little more?
Okay, so This is the pointer to a data structure of this type, right? But this is also part of this type. So if we tried to write instead, I'll just erase. If we just did this instead, you get a compiler error because while it's building this type doesn't exist. It has no idea what it is because it only gets named right here. So think of this as typedef old name, new name. The old name is from here to the end brace, and the new name is here. So unless the old name is completely defined, not in terms of the new name, your typedef won't work. So that's why we have to put this. And that's why I put the underbar here, just to distinguish between struct node T and node T. OK. So a singly linked list. Now, I've made a little fun example of linked lists. So let's take a look at it. OK. So as you can see, right here, I have typedefed a struct, very similar to the one we just did, that has a data input and a pointer to another structure of the same type. And then I gave it the name node underbar T. And then in our main, so we declare three nodes, and we call them first, second, and third. And then we create a pointer to a node called current, which we'll explain why we have that in a second. And then we have an integer, which is just going to be our loop index for the for loop, and some value, which will be, we'll see why we have that in a second. So then we have some for loop, and we're prompting the user to enter an integer value. We're storing that answer in the variable value. And then, depending on what iteration of the for loop we're in, we're storing that in the data field of the respective nodes. Do you understand why we use dot data to access the data element?
I thought it was a point. Well, because that's not a point.
Right. So if it was a point, well, yeah. So data is just a field of the structure. So we can just say first.data, and it's not a pointer. We actually have the structure right in front of us. Current is the pointer, and if we were using current, we would use the arrow, correct? So we're just storing the values in the structures. And then here's where we do something weird. We link the nodes together. So first.next is ampersand second. So what we're saying is, since the next field of the structure is a pointer, and pointers are just addresses, we need to pass it the address of the node that we want to link it to. So if we have, you know, if we have first this is first and this is second and this is third, we know we get some integer values that we're slapping in there. And then these fields still are nothing. They're just junk right now. So what we're saying is now first.next is the address of second. So it's basically saying, give me a pointer to second so that I can link to it. Next line, second.next is the address of third. So we're just we're continuing the pattern. We're just linking the list together. And then third.next is null, which we usually denote by a slash mark going through the box if we're drawing them out. The reason for this is because the list is done now. We only have a list of three elements in this program. So there is nothing to link to. Okay? And then we have this other line. Current is the address of first. So remember up here, the current is a node T star. It's a pointer to something of type node T. And so basically now we're saying we have some box here. And it's got a flag that says it takes things of type node T star named current. Just think of this as a location in memory, this box here. And it can hold this type of thing. And we're saying, just give me a pointer right there. Node current is the address of first. That's all we want right now. And then we're going to traverse the nodes to print out the data in them. So let's see. So we're going to tell the user that the numbers they entered were something. And while current is not null, and right now it's not because it's pointing to first, it's going to print out current arrow data, which, remember, is the same. Because we have a pointer, the arrow operator is going to dereference the pointer and access the data field of what it's dereferenced, which is equivalent to saying star something dot. Dereferencing, accessing the data field. Or you can just do it this way. So two choices. Probably better to use the arrow. It's a little nicer. So it's going to... this is just a shorthand. This was the way it was, and then they figured this... Why have this complicated star parentheses blah dot expression when you can just put an arrow instead? So it was just, this is just created as a shorthand, but it is functionally equivalent to this one. So we're going to print out what's in the data field pointed to by current, and then current is current next. Did I do that right? Oh yeah. So current arrow next. So when we say current arrow next, we're saying follow me to first, access the next field of what it's being pointed to, and set current equal to that. So when we say current arrow next, current equals current arrow next, we're basically going here, looking to what it's pointing to, and changing our arrow to point to that. Because now this address is the same as this address. And it'll continue that pattern until it hits null, which is here. So let's take a look at this program in action. Okay, so it prompts me to enter an integer. We'll put in 5, and then another one, and another one. And it tells me that what I entered was 5, 8, and 11. So remember that we were storing 5, 8, and 11 in the fields right there. First.data equals value, second.data equals value, third.data equals value. So what we just did, let me erase some of this. We'll clear it out and start again. So at the start, this is what we have. Something of node T type, first, second, and third, and a pointer. And then we're getting integers and storing them in the data fields as they went. So we put a 5, an 8, and an 11. And then we linked the nodes together. So first.next is second, second.next is third, or the address of second and third, and third.next is null. And then current points to the first element. So now we're going to traverse nodes to print out. While current is not null, we want to print the current data, what the data field of what current is pointing to. Current is pointing to 5. We want to print out the data field. And then we want to advance current to whatever current's pointing to's next pointer. It's not null. We want to print it out. And we want to advance the pointer again. Not null. Advance the pointer again. Sort of, think of it as now it's pointing to null. Because, I mean, it really goes somewhere over there and whatever. Now current is null. So we're not going to print anything out, because if we dereference a null pointer, we'd crash and burn, and that wouldn't be very good. So we're done. 5, 8, 11 is what it prints out. 5, 8, 11 is what we got. If I run that again, it's exactly what we wanted. exactly what we got. So imagine, you know, I'm going to save this for doubly linked list then. So this is a single linked list. Now, useful, but we can make it better. We're going to create something instead that's a doubly linked list. And what that's going to look like is this. So we're going to do the same thing again. We're going to create something of type node underbar node underbar t. And again, it's going to have a data field. And again, it's going to have a pointer to the next thing. But we can improve the data structure by also having a pointer to the previous thing, so that now any element can look one forward or one back. So we just need another pointer instead. We'll call this one prev. And then, again, we'll just give it the name node t. Comfortable with this concept? Struct underbar, yeah, and then star prev here.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're the same. Okay. So, I have another thing. Ironically, LS2 for double. And let's see why this one's a little different. So, again, our data structure, I called it a node2t. Okay. Our data structure is exactly what we wrote. And this time we create something of type node 2 underbar t. We have first, second, third, and we have a fourth. And we have a current pointer again. Same I and value. We're doing the same thing basically. We're getting the values of three of the nodes right here. Okay. So right now, in our doubly linked list, so we're going to imagine that now the nodes look something like this. They have a data field and two pointer fields. And again, we've called them first, second, and third. And we've gotten values for them. Let's just put in 2 here, 6 here, and 12 here. We say we got that from reading in the integers. Now we're saying first previous field is null. We're here now, where the cursor is blinking. So we know it's not going to point to anything, because it makes sense if you think that first isn't going to have anything that comes before it, because it's first. First.next is the address of the second. That's nothing new. Second.previous goes back to first, and this makes sense. Because now, you know, what comes after first is connected, and what comes before second is connected to it. And we repeat the process again for second and third. Third next is null. Sorry, I didn't put the arrow there. And then again, we have some current star, some current pointer. Of type node 2 underbar t star. And we set that to the address of first.
So the second points to the little box?
Second points the actual, just the node. So I guess I'll draw it like this. So it's not pointing to a box. It's pointing to the entire structure. Okay. So what's different? Now we ask the user to insert a fourth value. Please enter one more integer. So we get that. So now we forgot that we had this fourth object. And in there we'll put, we get 5. So what we're trying to do, what the goal of this function is, and I haven't said this yet, is that we want to keep, I didn't write very full instructions of what the user should do, but the user is supposed to input 3 values of increasing magnitude. And the fourth value is supposed to be in between the first and the third, and it's going to put it in place so that the list is sorted. So this is like one of the cool things we can do with doubly linked lists. So we're saying traverse the nodes to sort. We're now here. While current is not null, it's pointing to first. If current's pointing to data field is less than fourth.data, so if this data field right now is less than this, we just want to move one forward because it's clearly not going to come before this. So we're just advancing the current pointer by 1. Now, the second time we go through this, this if statement here is not true because 6 is not less than 5. So we go into the else statement. Now, here's where syntax gets a little nasty, so feel free to stop me if you get confused at all. Else, current's previous next pointer becomes 4th. So, current's previous's next. We're just following the arrows, the addresses. Current points here. Current's previous field points to first. So what we are modifying in this line when we have this input is first.next. Okay? We are modifying first.next. And we're saying make it point to fourth. So we have changed this arrow now. I'm going to go with some color. This arrow no longer points to second. It now points to fourth. Current's previous next. That's really the only kind of nasty line. Current is still here. Current's previous also points to fourth. So now this arrow is going to go away. And it's going to point here also. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Fourth dot previous. Note that we're using the dot operator because we actually have the structure. We're not pointing to it with current, so we don't need the arrow because current is a node 2t star. So we need to use the arrow to dereference and access. But fourth is just a node 2t, so we can use the dot operator. Fourth dot previous equals current previous. So current previous, I messed that up. Okay, I made a mistake. What it's supposed to do is point to where this arrow used to do. I don't know why this code works because there's a mistake in it. But what it's supposed to do is point to what this used to point to. Because now if you say this, it's just going to point to itself. I don't understand why this works. Why my code works. But remember, this arrow used to be here, and now it's here. So this line actually just says fourth.previous is this, but that's not the case. It actually is supposed to be this. And this arrow doesn't exist. And fourth.next is current, which makes sense because 5 is going to come before 6. Okay, so a lot of arrow, that was just rearranging the pointer. So now if we just look at this now logically, we start at the beginning. 2 goes to 5. So the box on the left is the previous pointer, and the box on the right is the next. So 2, the next thing is 5, the next thing is 6, the next thing is 12. And going backwards, 12, the previous thing was 6, the previous thing was 5, the previous thing was 2. So that is in order. Once we reassign the pointers, we break because we know we found the issue. And then we just print the same way we did again. We reassign current to first and move through them. What would fix the code is having a temporary pointer that just holds the location here and then assigns it to that. This actually should work. I tested it before I came in, and it worked. So let's run ls2. I'll put in the same inputs. And it prints them in order. I don't understand how this doesn't break now that I just realized that mistake. But as you can see, it does traverse the list according to the arrows that we've drawn out. It goes 2, 5, 6, 12. And if we changed it so that instead we did and put 9 in, which would mean we'd move this set of arrows around instead, it prints it again 2, 6, 9, 12 in the correct order. Okay, so doubly linked lists, pretty cool, allow us to do fun things like this. Are there any questions? Do you have any questions about it? Okay. So that's all I really have to share on linked lists today. So let's change gears a little bit to hash tables, which I'm going to talk about pretty quickly. So a hash table is a data structure that we use to assign a key or some sort of reference to some data. I might not be very clear, but let's imagine for a minute. So let's create some, you know, this will be our hash table. So it means that we have a hash table with 10 slots, and each slot can hold a string. And they're accessible with the same array indexes that we've been using. And we just want to write some sort of hash function that will map a given string to a key. And the key here is the number of the element of the array. So I didn't write one because a hash function, there's no right hash function. It's just however you decide to map the keys. So one possible one that I'm just going to give you like sort of pseudocode on it, but the hash function f could be, you take the string length of the word, and you multiply that by the ASCII value of some random character in the word. So this right here returns us, if you write the random function, this is like pseudocode. We would assume that this would return a value between 0 and the length of the word. So that would just give us, and then if you plug that in here, it just gives us some character in the word. Because this is actually, it's 0 inclusive to string length word not inclusive. So if the word was hello, this function would return us a value between 0, 1, 2, 3, or 4, which either one of those can access a character in the word. This is just random. And then we raise all of this to the 15th power.
Did it say
random 0? Yeah, it says rand 0. This isn't like a real, this is just like, if this is pseudocode. And then we raise all this mess to the 15th power, and then we mod by 10. And this will take any word and assign it to something in here. So let's say, you know, we run this function and we get hello goes into hash 4. Now, from here on, once you put something in the hash table, you run into the issue of collisions, which means we could run another word which could also get hashed to 4. But we want to keep the key 4 for hello. We don't want to have to bump it out because we still want the word. So there are a couple of possibilities. there's something called linear probing. There's quadratic probing. There are many other types of probing. And there's chaining. And there's a couple types of chaining. So with linear probing, when you have a collision, you just, you know, say we now do the word, I don't know, spy. And say spy's hash value is 4. What it will do is put a word in the next available slot down. So it'll instead, even though spy's hash function value is 4, it will put it in 5 because 4 is occupied. And you know, we do another word and it gets 4 again, it'll put it in 6. Quadratic probing instead will, the first time you do it, it'll try and put it in f of word, which is this, so if it's 4. Then it will try and put it in f of word plus 1. Then it will, if that doesn't work, it'll put in f of word plus 4. And the reason you do this, oops, these don't need parentheses. That does. The reason you do this is so that if your hash function is bad and you end up getting 4s all the time, you don't want to have something called clustering. You don't want all of your hash values to be in this block here. And with quadratic probing, you're saying, okay, so if you use linear probing on another word, cat, and say cat was 4, linear probing would put it in 6, because it's the next available slot for that hash value. Quadratic probing would say, okay, 4 doesn't work, so it's not this. F of word plus 1 doesn't work, it's already occupied, so it's 5. F of word plus 4 would be 4 plus 4, so 8. So it puts cat here instead of 6. And now we've got some division. Now we have some slots. We're not clustering all the words together. There is the issue. Let's see. So again, it would continue if this didn't work. It would be f of word plus 9. And it's modular to the size of the array. So let's see how we can break this. Plus 1 plus 4. So now if this didn't work, we'd do plus 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We put, you know, some word there. So then we'd have, if it didn't work, we'd have 16. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Then we'd have to add 11. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. This might not work. Then we'd have to add 13. So this would fail. So then we keep going. Eventually, you might, I'm not going to keep going because that would just take forever, but eventually you might get into a situation, especially with quadratic probing, because you'll always run into this pattern of, is the pattern of squares. 16, 25, 36, 49, 64, 81, 100. So if you just think about it as, well, it depends on the size of the table you're modding by, but you know, 1 squared, 2 squared, 3 squared, this is what 4 squared ends with, 5 squared, and then this pattern repeats. So depending on the size of the table, you could end up in something where these slots are all occupied, and you could have blanks here, but you'll never fill them because you can never mod your hash in such a way that you'll end up in a blank space, and then your program just crashes, or it'll just go on forever, and the word will never get hashed. So you got to be careful when you're doing hashes like that. It's a possibility that you won't be able to hash some words with a model like this. Chaining employs the idea of a linked list, where instead of the hash table just containing strings, each cell, and for, we'll just say it's a hash table of size 3, which is really ineffective. It contains a pointer to some sort of thing you create, a structure that you create, that has a data type of a word and a pointer to the next thing. And for this case, you know, if every word that you did hashed to 0 in this hash table of size 3, that would be fine. And you could hash every word because you just build a linked list that goes on and on. And you can then put everything in here. Obviously, this is going to cost a huge amount of memory, where if you're doing a probing model, you'll only be able to fit as much as the contents of every cell of the array times the size of the array.
What is string
in that? String is just like a string that we've passed in. It's just a word that we've hashed. And you know, you could get another one, and this will point and so this is the chaining model. This is separate chaining. So, you know, these are the differences that we have between the linear probing model of a hash table and separate chaining model. Okay, so let's take a couple minute break. And we will move on to binary trees when we get back. All right, so we're back. We're going to be talking about binary trees, probably for the rest of the super section. So a binary tree, I've drawn this sort of thing here. A binary tree you can think of sort of like a linked list, but with a slightly different twist to it. So we're going to, again, create some structure. I'm going to use node T again. I'm also too short for this. Okay. And it's going to, again, contain a data field. Or no, I'm sorry. I'm going to call it a value field this time. It's going to contain a value field and a pointer to something called left. And interestingly enough, something called right. And we're going to type def this as a node T. So this is the underlying data structure of a binary search tree, our node Ts, where that we'll assume that the circle that we're going to be drawing here is the value. And the arrows point to the left child of this node and the right child of this node. So another way to think of it is this is the root. It's sort of like an upside down tree. Imagine a tree being on its end. This is the root of the tree. These are called branches. And these guys down here that don't have any branches coming off them are the leaves. And these guys are just internal nodes. They don't get cool names. So we're going to talk about binary search trees, which have a cool property, which is that they're in order. So imagine the root contains the value 40. This means that everything to the left of the root is going to have some value less than 40. And everything to the right of the root is going to contain a value greater than 40 in a binary search tree. We'll put a 20 here. And a 60 here. Now, imagine this part doesn't exist for a second, and we're just looking here. Now we have to do the same thing again. This is the root. Everything to the left has to be lower. Everything to the right has to be higher. Same thing here. And we'll fill in the leaves the same way. Oh, I picked good numbers. So everything, you know, if we drew, sort of bisected the tree here, everything to the left of 40, 20, 10, 35, 15, 25, and 35, are all less than 40. And in 20, everything to the left of 20, and everything to the left of 10 is less than. And this is true for every node in the tree, as you can verify. So we're going to talk about three operations that we can do on binary search trees. And this the first operation will also sort of explain how to construct them. So we're going to write a function to insert something into a binary search tree. Naturally, to construct one, we need to start with one. So you can assume that if you don't have something, the first thing you insert will be the root of the tree. So you can extend this that way. So we're going to write a function, I don't know why I capitalized that S, to insert the node. We want to, given some root, given a tree with some root, which we're going to call root, we want to insert the node, tree node, into that tree in the proper location while keeping the binary search tree property true. So let's write the function, and then we'll insert something into the tree. So if the root of the tree is null, then the root is the tree node. Does that make sense? If there's no tree, we're making a tree with this node as its thing. Else if root arrow value, which means whatever root's pointing to's value field, which you defined here, is less than the equivalent operation on tree node, then, fun with recursion, guys, here we go. Okay, I'm going to stop here for a minute to explain how this works, because now we're just, this isn't going to be fun, maybe. So if the value of what's pointed to by root is less than the value pointed to by tree, because it's less than, we know, based on the property of a binary search tree, that it's going to be following the left pointer. But if we start here, there's another subtree starting at 20, this subtree right here, which is not null. So we can't just, you know, we can't just stick something in here, because there's something here now. So we have to start at this new subtree and repeat the process until we hit something down here in the leaf section, which doesn't have children, and its children then are null. Then it's, you know, it's just the same on the right. Root right, tree node. Okay, let's walk through this function once on a trial and see what happens. So this, you know, we'll have some thing in memory. It's a node t star called root. Called root. It's going to point to this tree, that's the root of which is 40. And we will run insert node root. Let's run it on 38. Okay? So we call this function insert node on the tree pointed to by root. And what we want to insert. Okay, so it's actually, we'll pass in x where x is a root, is a node t with value equals 38, left is null, and right is null. Yeah, it would be node t, it would be x dot value is 38, x dot left is null, x dot right is null. It's given here. It's of this type.
No, but what I'm saying is, do you even have to say null, or will it assume that you did null?
It's best to assign them to null, just to make absolutely sure. Okay. Always best to assign the children of a tree to null in case, just to be absolutely certain that that's what you're doing. So we are saying, insert this node x, which I guess looks like this. It's just sort of sitting there. It's a 38 in a circle with no arrows coming out of it. If root is null, root is tree node. Root is not null, so we don't have to worry about it. Else, if root's value is less than tree node's value. Did I do that right? If root's value is greater. I apologize. This should be greater than. Yeah, okay. Sorry. Root value, if root is bigger than what you're passing it, then you're sending it to the left. Okay, sorry, this is supposed to be greater than. Sorry. I did it backwards. So if root's value is greater than tree node's value, which it is, 40 is greater than 38, we're going to insert node root left tree node. So root is still here. Root actually never moves, this pointer. But now we're passing in the address of this guy. And the same node here, 38. Run the function again. We're recursively, getting this into the tree. If root is null, false. Else if root value is greater than false. So now we need to put it in the right. So we're going to a new subtree with this guy now, 30 as the root node, and 38 again as tree node. Repeat the process again. We get 35, 38. Oh, we have to repeat the process again so that if root's value is, so now it's less than again, so we're going to go to the right. We're passing in this pointer right here. There is none. This is null right here. The right pointer, the right child of 35 is null. So we passed in null, comma, x, where x is still this 38 pointer. Because of the recursive nature of this algorithm, this link will be formed because of the step above it. And now, root is null, so root is tree node. Now, 38 is in the tree. I didn't draw this particularly well, but it's on the left half of the tree. So it holds this property. It holds the property at every subtree. And because of the recursive nature of the algorithm, this link is formed.
What if you put in 39? Would it still be
at 39? So if I put in 39 now, then it would do this again and put it here. A binary search tree does not have to be, is what's called balanced. This tree, before we put this stuff in, from here up, is called balanced because the left side has the same depth as the right side. But it doesn't have to be the case. So that is how you insert in the tree. Searching through a tree is another operation that might come in handy. If you want to see if 38 exists in the tree, you're going to follow, I'm not going to write the function out, but you're going to follow a very similar process where you're passing in, this time it'll be, the header of this will be, I guess it'd be a Boolean search. On a root and a key, where the key is 38, 60, 50, 30, etc. And then you want to do the same thing. So if you've reached the end of a search, because you know, based on this property, that if you hit the bottom and there's nowhere else to go, by the path you've had to take, because less than has to be here, greater than has to be here, by the paths you've been forced to take, if you hit the bottom of the tree and you haven't got it, it's false. So if the root is null, if root null, false. If the key is less than where you are now, if the key is less than where you are, you want to go left. If it's greater than where you are, you'll go right. So we're just going to move on to the next subtree, to the left or the right of where we are. If it doesn't have any of these conditions, then by default, because we haven't left the tree, it's not less than or greater than where we are, we must be at the number. Return true. So pseudocode for search. There you go. Any questions on search? Makes sense? It's very similar to insert, except for you're not manipulating the tree, you're just looking through it. The final useful operation for us is traversal of the tree. Okay, if I erase this? This is, again, a fun little recursive thing. Before I begin, though, let me give a little bit of background. So there are three ways to traverse the tree. Three traversals. Actually, there are more than three, but these are the most common. So you can go in pre-order notation, pre-order traversal, an in-order traversal, and a post-order traversal. And these are all in binary search trees. A pre-order traversal means that you will visit the root first, visit the left child, and then visit the right child. So as you can see, it won't be in order. So this will actually return, it'll be, so if we were to print out the values in a pre-order traversal of this, it would be 40, 20, I'm not positive about this. I believe this is what you'll get. No, that's not right. That's a breadth first traversal. It'll visit this guy, and then it'll visit the children. But I'll show you I have a code for the in-order traversal. An in-order traversal will actually go and visit them in order. It'll print them in this way. So the numbers will come out in order. And post-order will visit the children first, and then the parents. So here's the code for tree traversal in order. All you need to know is where you start. What we do if there's nothing left, root is null, we just return. We'll be done. This is a void, so we can't return anything. Otherwise, we want to go to the left of where we are and print that Everything to the left of us is going to be less than us, so that wants to come first if we're doing it in order. Then, let's print ourselves and then do everything to the right of us, because that's all going to be larger than us. And when we hit children that are, there aren't any, we just go back up a level. So let's take a look at the step through this now. Again, root, still going to point to 40, we're going to use the same exact tree. If the root is null, return, it's not. So then we want to go tree in order, root left. So we're here now. But don't forget that this is recursive again. So there are frames in our stack that when the root is 40, this guy still is waiting. But now we've sent root 20, which is in control. It's gonna say, okay, print everything to the left of me, which is not null. So root 10, where the root is 10 on this function, is now the function that's running, and the other two are just waiting. This is still not null. So root, and the root is 5, is now here. Now the root is not null, so the root is not null, so it's going to call it again on root left. Now, so the root is 5's left child. Does that make sense? So, but that's null. So it's going to return. And now we're back to 5. 5 was here, had just executed this line when it had to wait. Print my value. We get that. Do the tree in order and everything to my right. So now on the stack, 5 has to wait again, and the root is now 5's right. 5's right is null. It returns. Comes back off the stack again. We're done. So 5's thing leaves. 10, similarly, was here again. And so now the next thing it'll execute is the print statement. It'll print itself and then go to 10's right, which is 15, which will check the left, print itself, check the right, move back, and now we're back to 20. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Long, long, long. I'm not going to go on because it would take 20 minutes to go through it. Because so the way the function is written is that if the root is null, we return. The root isn't null. So it's going to do everything to the left of it first. Print the tree in order on the left. 20 is not null, and it has children. So 40, you know, when we did this, 40 is frozen. It's when you get back to 40, it'll print the statement. But because of the way the stack is working, it's going to, you know, it'll go here, 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 no. So now we're going to kick back, and we're going to go to the highest thing on the stack at the printf statement. So that's why 5 will get printed. Then after 5 gets printed, it checks the right root, null. So 5, we can like assume is done. So once you leave 5, the next thing was root is 10, which is similarly left in a frozen place here. So 10 gets printed, checks the right. So 10 isn't done yet, because it's going to check the right. 15 will do the same thing. So it's printed 10, but 10's still here. 15 then has been, all of its nodes have been done. And so when you pop back to 10, root was 10, 10 was on this line. So then 10 is done. And then you go to 20, which will, it had already called the root left thing, which was this thing. So it'll print itself. 20's printed. And then it's going to go through that whole process again over here. So 20, 25, 30, 35, 38, 39. Because 38 and 39 are both write children, so it'll print 35 first. Then you come back to 20. 40 finally picks up at the printf statement. So then that's why 40 gets printed. And then it goes through it again. So it's just because of where things get frozen when functions are called again. Okay. We're not going to have time for Huffman coding, but I will get to talk about heaps quickly. Which board do I want to erase? Huffman coding is a way that we can compress data so that we don't have to use 8 bits to represent a character necessarily. We can use more, or less, data compression method. It's kind of cool, I guess. I'm going to erase this, okay. So a heap. Heaps are very similar to binary search trees, except for one thing, or two, actually. Say we have a heap like this. The root is 11. So, this is a valid heap. Heaps have two properties different from binary search trees. Heaps are forced to be balanced, except for on the bottom level. At the deepest level, it can be one deeper than the highest complete level. But when you fill it, it has to be filled left to right. Binary search trees, again, like with this example here, we had something two lower. That would not be valid in a heap. Additionally, this, everything in a heap, this is a max heap. A max heap means that everything is lower than its parent. So 8 is lower than 11, 6 is lower than 11, 5 is lower than 8, 8 is lower than 2. But see, I could have also put a 7 here. Even though 6 is over here on a higher level, this is still okay, because 7 is still lower than 8. So that's the depth rule and the heap property, which are the two things that differentiate heaps from binary search trees. Heaps are cool for heap sort, which I won't have time to get to, unfortunately. But I will show you how to build a heap, and hopefully maybe in the future we could talk about heap sort and show how it can be used. So again, you know, these are all node under bar t's. So let's say we have some node13, and we wanna what's called heapify a heap when we put something in it. So remember the depth rule, which says that when you're filling in the lower row, if it's not complete, it has to go in the next available slot, which would be here. So 13, we would stick there. Now, this is no longer a heap. So when you're heapifying something, you have to swap it with a value above it. Swap it with its parent to keep the heap property. So again, I don't have time to go through all the code on this, but what would happen is this, when you're heapifying something. And then again, we've created a heap. And you know, if we wanted to add something else, we could put in, you know, 4, already heapified. And if we wanted to add something else, we have to go over here, put in, you know, 9. 9 and 7 will get swapped. 8 and 9 will get swapped. And the heap property has been retained. Something else you might want to do with the heap is take out an element. In particular, you might want to take out the root. What happens in that case, if you want to heapify something after taking out the root, you replace it with the furthest right element in the bottom row. So 7 will go here instead. 13 is gone, and the 7 is no longer here. And then you have to down heap, which is you switch it with the highest valued child. 11 goes here, 7 goes here, and then we're back again to a heap, because this is true, and everything else is true about it. You can also replace middle nodes, so let's do that. So we want to replace 9. Say we don't want this node anymore. So the furthest right node in the tree on the bottom level is 4. So we stick that in there. And then we want to down heap by switching it with its highest valued child. And we're back. So, I mean, it may seem just kind of weird that I just like threw out this concept of heaps with little time left, but they have really unique properties that make sorting. There's a sorting algorithm. It's called heap sort. I am tempted to say that it runs in n log n time, so that's better than a lot of sorts we've worked with before. And you can use it. It's an in-place sort, and you can use it on an array. And if you imagine, so here is your root, this is your left child, and this is the right child. And then for this one, this is the left child, and this is the right child, and here, this is the left child, and that would be the right child, etc. You can actually use heap sort on an array, keeping this sort of idea in mind. That is all that we have time for today. I apologize we didn't get to heap sort, but definitely look it up. It's a really cool algorithm that you may want to use in your code if you're having sorting situations. Definitely take home points. Hopefully you understand how linked lists work, what a binary tree is, the operations for creating and inserting nodes in a binary search tree, searching through a binary search tree, and traversing one. A little bit on hash tables and heaps, which are very similar to binary search trees, but not quite the same. So that's it. Thank you. Goodbye.